you're listening to the oneofus.net podcast network. oneofus.net and all of the shows on it are 100% subscriber supported. Please consider becoming a subscriber to oneofus.net. Keep the site and all of our great shows going and get some terrific bonus content as well.
A cardinal once tried to question me. I ate his margarita pizza with an espresso and a nice Fanta.
Well, don't you all know that we are all in the mother's blessing and the greatness of the gods, although the seven. you went to Hannibal Lecter, I went to the High Sparrow from Game of Thrones for Jonathan Pryce.
Oh, that's right. He was the High Sparrow.
Yeah.
That's essentially what this is. This is just the meeting of two great minds and two great actors, so.
Yeah.
God, I love Jonathan Pryce so much.
He is like the greatest actor and nobody pays attention to this dude. I don't know why.
Did you guys see The Man Who Killed Don Quixote earlier this year?
I have not yet.
Nope, not me, no.
Easily one of his best performances. I don't know. I'm a Terry Gilliam apologist, except for Brothers Grimm and Tideland, which can go fuck themselves. But anyways, about this movie.
Yes, because this movie is The Two Popes. Now, this is interesting. This is one of like four major films that Netflix is pushing for the fiction categories for the Oscars. And I can kind of see why, because this is a pretty high-profile project when you look at the people behind it. Because, like we said, it's Jonathan Pryce and Anthony Hopkins in the two lead roles, which essentially they're in almost like 80% of this entire movie, just the two of them, like barely any other actors around them. But then it's also being written by Anthony McCarten, who wrote The Darkest Hour. Darkest Hour, the one with Gary Oldman in it. And then he also wrote The Theory of Everything and also Bohemian Rhapsody. But, you know. but then the director here is Fernando Mireles, who is a very on and off director, but he almost always gets a pass for stuff because he directed City of God.
Oh, yeah. That guy's going to get a pass for stuff for the rest of his life.
Underrated movie that he made that I really like is Blindness.
See, you seem to be the only guy I know who actually liked that movie.
Yeah. I don't know. I like it. Well, it feels like a spiritual sequel to Children of Men.
Kind of. I mean, although the one film I like from him that I just remember right now that he directed was The Constant Gardener, the one with, what's her name, Rachel Weisz that she won her Oscar for.
And Ralph Fiennes?
Yeah.
Ralph Fiennes, yeah.
That one really I was a little bit more mixed on. Maybe I might have to give that a revisit. I literally watched it in 2005 when I was like 12.
Yeah, I still haven't seen it all the way, but I would have been
nine.
Yeah, I like a good thriller.
Didn't know what was going on, really. What 12-year-old should know what's going on in that kind of political situation?
Come on, you got to educate yourself, man. It's 2019. You got to know about your politics. But anyways, who wants to give us a little summation here of what The Two Popes is about?
The Two Popes. The Two Popes is about the popening, not a correct term, of Cardinal Ratzinger as Pope Benedict, and his later unpopening and repopening of, played by Jonathan Pryce, Pope Francis. And it's filmed in a way that it's like you're watching the actual events happen, and Anthony Hopkins and Jonathan Pryce are spliced into the footage very seamlessly, I must say. And what the political ongoings are of being a cardinal, being a pope, having a past, and enduring tragedy.
Yeah, more or less that's what this is about, because it literally takes place right after the death of Pope John Paul II, which I believe was the guy right before Ratzinger, right?
That is correct.
Yeah, because so it's Ratzinger who takes over, like, the opening sequence is the election of how a pope is elected, which I knew about, but actually seeing it take place, I'm just like, this is very much like, it's just a Senate hearing, more or less. Just a bunch of people gather together, they put their votes down, and then they do that crazy ritual with the smoke.
What I thought was funny about that and intriguing about the whole film, that it was presented in this way. What did you guys think of the media outlets? There were several of them and in a lot of different languages being like, and the smoke will rise. It will be white or it will be black. The world is waiting, bated breath. And then it shows the actual cardinals going through with the practice, and it's very slow, very pedestrian, very.
It kind of looked like old people doing bingo.
Exactly.
They do have those balls and those little cards they fell out, so. But
yeah,
no, that's actually that was a good
interesting
point.
Though
that's a good point, because I actually feel like that's a big thing about what this movie's about ultimately, because even though it's mostly a performance piece between these two actors, it's really about the pressures of the world and how much it's affecting the Catholic Church. Like, you know, and to be fair, I am not Catholic. I am religious. I have my opinions on certain things. But it's interesting to see the way that this church, like a lot of other churches, are facing the problems of dealing with the movements politically and socially in the world, and a lot of it fueled by the media, a lot of it fueled by their own congregation, a lot of it fueled by the internal scandals going on in the Catholic Church at the time, because this was that point when a lot of those, you know, pedophilic priest cases were becoming big headline news stories in the media.
Yeah, a good tie-in with this movie, or a second watch, would be Spotlight.
Oh, yeah, that's almost a predecessor to this film.
Or My Dinner with Andre.
What?
That's a good one too, actually.
Well, okay. In terms of
pretty
the,
similar.
Yeah, I guess in terms of the two. Okay, I was like, wait, where were the pedophilic priests in My Dinner with Andre? I'm like, oh wait, I get what you mean.
Have you not seen?
I've only seen chunks of My Dinner with Andre, but I get what you mean in terms of the performance style. Because yes, that's the sole reason to watch this movie. I would say, like, there's a lot of good stuff I can say about this film, but the biggest reason is just to watch Jonathan Pryce and Anthony Hopkins act, because this is like them at the top of their game.
Oh, this isn't even just them on the top of their game. This is some of the best acting all year.
Oh, yeah. Because, I mean, Jonathan Pryce is more or less the lead character, because almost all the major events revolve around him, both as an older man and then at some point as a younger man in his flashback. But he really dominates the screen as this character. What is it? Pope Francis, also known as Cardinal Jorge Bergoglio. So, and he's... It's one of those interesting things where he's the progressive in this story. Like, you know, very much the, you know, open-minded to new ideas, has read some Marxist literature too. He's a little bit more open to saying, hey, the Catholic Church is good. I totally believe in this cause, but there's some ways we can maybe shake things up a bit. Maybe do some things that maybe make people not think that we're just a bunch of stuck-up, rich, a-hole protectors of pedophiles, you know?
Yeah, exactly. And Anthony Hopkins, Cardinal Ratzinger, who becomes Pope Benedict, is, we must follow tradition. Tradition is everything. You know, God would never break tradition, so we shouldn't break tradition. And you can get the hell out if you disagree. And it's very kind of cat and mouse, more House of Cards than I thought it was going to end up being in that
it's sense. Very much, I almost compare it to that, like an Aaron Sorkin play. Like, it's a very kind of Steve Jobs-ish. Not in the sense of, like, the witty banter dialogue, but there is a lot of witty banter in this movie. But in the sense, like, it's a dramatization of a specific event. Most of it, probably not true. It, you know, as I said, it's inspired by true events more than actually based on true
of
events.
Of course.
But this is...
I joked about My Dinner with Andre, but it actually kind of reminded me more of End of the Tour.
Oh,
with,
yeah.
Jesse Eisenberg and, oh my gosh, why am I blanking on his name? Muppets.
Yeah, Siegel?
Jason Siegel.
Yeah.
Is that the one about David Foster Wallace?
Yes.
Writer of The Infinite Jest?
Yes.
Great movie.
I haven't seen the movie or read the book.
Oh, it's a great freaking movie, so.
Yeah, it's the best you'll ever see Jason Siegel act.
Oh, cool. Okay.
Yeah, and you know, that's the thing, like, there's something about these kind of one-on-one performance pieces that really, again, you have to have two really solid actors to make it work, and when you get two people who are at the top of their game or even just fit the part, because my goodness, these two actors both look and act just like their real-life counterparts in some ways.
Yeah, especially Jonathan Pryce. As much as I really loved Anthony Hopkins in the movie, Jonathan Pryce just stole the show for me.
Well, the great thing...
Oh, I was just going to say, he's been on a roll for, I don't know, this past decade, and I feel like nobody gives him any notice, like you were saying earlier.
Well, the thing with Jonathan Pryce is that he's a very low-key actor, but that really works for this character, because the idea that they're trying to do with this is, while they're also lobbying criticisms every now and then at the Catholic Church, the big point is that both these guys more or less have the best intentions at heart. Like, you know, obviously Anthony Hopkins is shown as being a little bit more of the stodgy conservative and also maybe more complicit in some things than we know, but deep in his heart, he truly does believe in what he believes in, you know? It's one of those things where it's, how do you take a common interest and work around different pieces that are all affecting those kind of interests
through conversation.
Yeah, lots and lots of peppy banter around pianos and drinking some wine and talking in a big cathedral at one point, which, man, some of the sets they chose for this is really, really cool.
Yeah, did you guys hear that they couldn't film in the Sistine Chapel, so they just rebuilt it?
Wow.
I was not aware of that. Holy cow.
Netflix has that straight fuck you money at this point.
But, you You know, and I can't imagine how much this cost. I'm sure it's not like a high budget thing, but it's definitely a very glossy production. And I gotta give that credit because this clearly was adapted from a stage play, which is weird because it's competing for original screenplay at the Oscars. Don't ask, it's stupid politics stuff. But yeah. It's one of those things where it is definitely a conversation piece, but it feels, it almost feels like adaptations of movies like Doubt, you know, where you get a stage play, but you make it feel more lived in and more expansive kind of thing.
Yeah, it was absolutely engaging all the way through.
Yeah.
Which is, I mean, not always hard to do, but when you got two people talking in a room together, you really got to have two talented actors and some great dialogue, and this had both in spades.
Oh, yeah. Which, one thing I really liked about this, too, and this is not so much a critique, but it is a warning to people that this is very subdued of a movie. You know, it's a very quiet film, even with the big acting pieces. It's not like they're not going to do any crazy shouting. No, Anthony Hopkins is going like, I am a king kind of thing, like he does in Thor.
Yeah, he's not going to go full Palpatine on anything.
Yeah, so
what I also really liked is for all the heavy subjects that they cover, it has a lightness to it.
Well, and that's what I'm saying. Like, it's a very light film. And to be honest, I actually wasn't paying attention as much in the first half because of some other things going on. I actually rewound the film because this is a film that deserves your attention because it's so light and so talky, you know?
Yeah, it almost feels very pleasant. Like, it's sort of been advertised as a drama comedy, and there's definitely not a lot of comedy to it at all, but the scenes that are comedic are just pleasant.
Yeah. No, it is just watching two older actors talk to each other, and there is funny little quips. Like, I love that bit where they're talking about, you know, like, where to find God, and they're just like, oh, let's hide under the shade there. Maybe we'll find God there. You know, stuff like that. Just,
yeah.
Just jokey little lines like that. It makes these characters very human, and I think that's one of the best things. Like, people may not want to think that the Popes can be humanized, but even with their titles, their positions, and their beliefs and that stuff, they feel like real people in this movie. They're not just these pious figures who are like, oh, it's all about Jesus, kind of thing like that.
Yeah, that's absolutely what I was worried about. I was worried that they got Anthony Hopkins because, one, he looks like the man, Pope Benedict, how Pope Benedict looks. And two, because he would ham it up because, I hate to say it, but Anthony Hopkins has been taking a paycheck to ham it up for the past, would you guys say 5 years, 10 years?
Yeah,
I would say that to some extent, but I do think he does a perfect job of being subdued in Westworld.
Absolutely. Oh, you're right. I want to say yes, but that's such a silly character.
As he is a silly character, two. But the way how he plays him is very, very subdued.
Right.
More subdued than just playing Hannibal Lecter.
Yeah. No, I agree with you. I think that a very small percentage of actors, especially Anthony Hopkins' age, could deliver the Westworld dialogue without sounding ridiculous. So,
yeah. I wish he'd go for a full return to form from playing, you know, sinister characters to like his performance in The Elephant Man. But I mean,
he's a very different actor from when he was back then, too, to be fair.
Yeah, true. He has such a warmth in that movie.
Yeah, well, I mean, mm-hmm. he's more warm than he's not in this movie. Like, again, he is kind of a crusty, stodgy type in this film, but you see layers to him even in those minutes where you realize a lot of that just comes from the way that, Pope Benedict was raised from early childhood, where he very early on decided what he wanted to do with his life, and he kind of just stuck very rigidly into that direction. So much so that he's not even aware of pop culture for the most part. Like, Pope Francis would hum along to ABBA songs or Beatles music, and he's just like,
What is that you're humming?
Yeah, Eleanor Rigby. Who is that? I've never heard of her before.
Who is that?
Who's Eleanor Rigby?
But you just realize how much it's almost like being the prime minister, like the king of England or some kind of position where it's like, this is what he's been trained to do. So on the one hand, you kind of say like, oh, he's just a, you know, strict, rigid old dude. But you kind of, you understand him in this movie, at least the way they portray his character in this one.
Yeah, but it doesn't keep from Jonathan Pryce immediately putting him like in his place at scenes, but in a way that's so respectful.
Oh yeah, because
that's like such a delicate balance.
That's the thing.
I'm just singing my praises for Jonathan Pryce. I'm sure he probably won't make it to being nominated for best actor because it's not as big of a performance as a lot of the other ones seen this year. Even ones I've seen earlier today. But
yeah, no, I feel like he deserves more credit. It's just, again, it's one of those things where he's just a quiet performer and that such. But he is really good. And there's a lot of good stuff in the making of this film, too. Like, the cinematography is done by Cesar Chalon, who also did City of God. And while it does have some of that very overexposed look that he does in a lot of his other films, it's still very slick and glossy and good-looking throughout.
I was mixed on the cinematography until the second half, where I just thought it was absolutely gorgeous.
Well, I mean, there's a few washed-out looks where it's just so bright, you're like, okay, I need to cover my eyes for a second. But actually,
yeah, that, I mean, well, especially watching it on the Dolby TV, where they immediately brighten everything to the highest brightness. that really helped with the, or really hurt the film with the washout parts. But it took a while getting used to the, sort of the office style that they'd have in certain scenes. And then they'd have like perfect steady shots.
Yeah. Okay. I see what you mean there. Cause they do a weird technique every now and then. Whenever they do a very dramatic sequence or a very intimate sequence, they do digital zoom in on their faces with a big shaky cam thing. And it's a little distracting at points.
Yeah, it was just a little distracting in the beginning, but as the movie went on, it became more stylistic in choice than just seeming cheap.
Yeah, absolutely. Although, you know, I will say that as much as I like a lot of the stuff with Anthony Hopkins and Jonathan Pryce, one of my favorite bits in this whole movie is the flashback sequence where you see, well, okay, the first flashback is good, but the second flashback, when you see what happened that Jonathan Pryce feels so guilty about in his life, that is a bit of history definitely. I didn't even really know about until this. It's like, oh, there was that thing going on at the time. It was really cool.
A lot of Argentinian politics, South American politics that, let's face it, and I'm guilty too, the world not only doesn't know about, but probably could care less about.
And yeah, that's the thing where it's like, this seems like such a big deal for nobody to talk about, you know?
No, exactly. And in these men's conversation comes one of the vital points of the movie, like, what is God's purpose? Is it to make the world through the media feel better about itself, or actually heal the world and save the victims of tragedy?
Exactly. And I think that's one of those things that, again, it like you keep saying about delicate balance, Nathan, is that the way they approach faith and religion and these kind of things, it's a way to not just be like, well, I mean, obviously, because it's talking about Pope, it's going to be more pro-religion and pro-faith, but it's talking about it on a very human level of what does religion do to help the people, ultimately?
Yeah. And I especially like when Catholic guilt is tackled in films, and this tackles it very well.
Yeah, me too. Absolutely.
I still say the epitome of Catholic guilt is Manchester by the Sea, but it's for a very different reason.
Oh, dude. Oh,
no.
That is the most Catholic guilt movie you can ever go go into.
My stomach just sank when you Catholic said Manchester. Guilt. That's how much.
I can't even go to Manchester, England, because I think about Manchester by the Sea.
Either of
Silence
you two...
is another one that gets me on that. And
oh, that's a Scorsese film, isn't it? That's about Jesuit priests as well.
Yeah.
Yes.
I haven't seen the film, but I've read the book.
Oh, Silence is fantastic. I also highly recommend First Reform, but I'm sure you've already seen it.
Absolutely
Bradley.
Have.
Oh,
absolutely.
First Reform, that's a whole other level of insane religious films.
Yeah.
Oh,
I
yeah.
I was raving about that one last year.
Yeah, but no, like this one, again, like this one is actually a very moderate and a very, you know, insightful look on dealing with religion on a very human level. And I think on the whole, the stuff they say about faith is very important. Like even Anthony Hopkins has a few good pointers every now and then about the purpose of religion and the purpose of faith to helping the soul. And it's just, you know, again, whether you believe in faith or not, it's a good idea. Just like, yeah, how do we, you know, we're here to lead a church of millions and millions and millions of people. And we can't let these kind of things hinder the ultimate goal of what we should be doing rather than what we are.
Yeah, and I love that it's able to tackle all of that and still feel very light.
Yeah.
Like, I didn't go out of it feeling like most movies that you see towards the end of the year that are up for Best Picture, like, oh, wow, that made me hate myself. You end it on a very positive note.
Yeah, the soccer match.
Yeah, I was going to say, definitely save for the post-credit scene. It's just very
I didn't even know there was going to be a post-credit sequence when I saw it. I'm like, oh, that was so great.
That was a lot of fun.
Oh, definitely.
Yeah. No, so, I mean, is there any other, like, criticism you guys can face about this? Because, honestly, I mean, I have minor ones for why this may not be my favorite movie of the year, but honestly, it's just a really solid watch all the way through.
Yeah, I agree with you on that. I really don't have any big criticisms of the movie.
I'd say neither of you were disappointed Jude Law didn't make a cameo.
Yeah, John Malkovich was nowhere to be seen.
You know, that is so confusing to me. Whenever I'd see both these films advertised, well, not films, one, I guess, is a TV show.
Yeah.
I don't know which is which. When you said, hey, are we ready to review The Two Popes, Who Wants In? I immediately was like, oh, they released that full season? So what were you guys' final thoughts on it?
I would say this is a very subdued film. I thought it was going to be a lot like Frost Nixon, with Frank Langella as Nixon, who I'd never forget played a perfect Nixon. Ha ha ha. You know, pushing it to like 15. Oh, the president does something that's not illegal. Like, I thought that's how Anthony Hopkins would play Pope Benedict, being the villain. But Pope Benedict isn't a villain, and neither is Anthony Hopkins playing him. He actually gives the most profound yet simple advice in this movie, and it personally moved me to tears when he said it. You'll have to watch it and guess what I meant, because there's a lot of good advice in this and a lot of healing and a lot of profound speeches that these two men share with each other. They're both men clearly dedicated to the cloth and clearly looking out what's best, not just for their religions, but for their own souls personally.
Well, and I mean, the whole fact that the Pope wants to resign is a good indication that he's just like thinking about what it means to do what he does, you know?
Right, exactly. Yeah. It's not cartoony at all. I do think they held back on a lot of the Catholic scandals. There's a scene where he's about to divulge a certain scandal, and it goes silent. And you, as a viewer, if you've watched the news for the past 20 years, are just supposed to fill it in. I think that's, I don't want to say cowardly, but it's something.
I don't think it's a perfect movie, really. Like, it is, but
that's true. It's a choice. I wouldn't consider it to be anywhere near cowardice.
Right.
But I definitely would have maybe respected the movie a lot more as a whole if it went a toe deeper, if I had a criticism.
Just a little bit. And that's pretty much my one criticism. And just closing out, this I would like to present as why we should just get younger actors for flashback sequences. It was very good. The younger actor playing a young Jonathan Pryce captured his mannerisms very well.
Oh, yeah.
His big, deep stare, his over-exaggerated sudden shock and concern, very well. I think the technology is awesome, but can we please just start casting younger people again when we do flashback sequences?
It would be rather unconvincing to try and de-age Jonathan Pryce to play this far back into his past.
Right. No. Oh, we some need filmmakers de-aged would have tried.
For sure. We need de-aged Carrie Fisher in every movie.
With her big giant doll eyes.
Yeah, I'm just going to say 8 Hail Marys out of 10. Father, where art thou? No. 8 out of 10.
Okay.
As you can see, I am not Catholic either now. The cat's out of the bag.
I know. Well, I'll go next with this one. I think that this is a super solid movie. I really enjoyed it. My wife was even more into it. She's just like, yeah, this is great stuff. And again, it is, though, one of those movies that you really need to go and knowing this is a stage play, more or less. This is very much watching two actors talk and word banter around for a whole bunch of the film. And all the other people in the film, except for the flashback characters, are mostly just there to step in and step out of their scenes. Like, there's literally one guy who's playing one of the Swiss Guards, which I love the Swiss Guards outfits of these movies, you know, the big orange and purple costumes. But he literally has one line just like, the Pope will wait for you right here. And then he walks off stage and you never hear him again. So it's just like, man, I bet that actor was so happy to be with Jonathan Pryce in that sequence. But yeah, this was a really good movie. I'm debating on whether it still could make my top 10. I don't know if it will, but it's also to say that it's totally worth checking out for this type of stuff. So I'm going to give this also 8 out of 10 Pope pizza parties.
Yeah.
All right. I thought that this movie was extremely solid, completely engaging. I love movies like this, like End of the Tour and the Before trilogy and My Dinner with Andre, where they take two characters and have them get into very deep conversations. And the conversation that they had were so deep and engaging. I've said engaging twice. I hate that I repeated myself on that. And it's really just two veteran actors at the top of their game. Anthony Hopkins is incredible. Jonathan Pryce, if it weren't as stacked a year for Best Actor, I think he would be a surefire contender. But what really impressed me so much about the movie is how it handled serious topics but had a light touch without feeling, like you were saying earlier, cowardly. It definitely doesn't feel like a cowardly movie. It just, it's kind of pleasant, which is weird, but I don't know. I just, on the whole, I really enjoy this movie. It definitely won't make my top 10, but that's only because there have been a lot of things that have even come out this month that have cracked my top 10.
Oh, yeah.
It's shuffling around so much. But yeah, I would give this, let's go with 8.5 Anthony Hopkins disgustingly eating a piece of margarita pizza out of 10.
All about that pizza in this movie.
Margarita pizzas are good. Why is everyone insisting they're gross all of a sudden?
No, I'm not saying that they're gross. I had a margarita pizza right after this movie because I was so hungry. But the way how he ate it, he does this like finger move. Like he scrapes the cheese underneath his fingers and he... I see why Martha Stewart just had enough in the 90s.
One thing, too, I also appreciated that apparently Anthony Hopkins actually played the piano in those sequences, too. Like, he's actually a professional musician.
Wow.
Yeah. I'm just wow. Nice. Is there anything this guy can't do other than eat pizza properly?
I was really impressed by Jonathan Pryce's Spanish until I realized he was dubbed.
Oh, I assumed he was. It was too perfect for someone to just pick up.
Yeah, the very English actor doing Spanish.
Yeah. He spoke a lot of Spanish in Don Quixote, and I was like, oh, maybe he just took lessons and he's just fucking has it down. But then I saw dubbing by, and I was like, oh, okay.
You know, and actually that's kind of a good point, too, is that there's actually quite a bit of foreign language in this film. Like, going in, I thought it would just be a very, like, oh, because it's two British actors talking about British stuff. It's like, nope, they speak Latin, they speak Portuguese, they speak Spanish, they speak quite a bit of different languages in this film.
Yeah, I'm surprised the Golden Globes didn't nominate it for Best Foreign Language Film.
Well, they nominated The Farewell. This would have been a close second.
Yeah, there's still time.
This episode of Screener Squad was brought to you by Eye on the Prize.
Hey!